You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily podcast on the Minnesota Timberwolves, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I am your host, Colton Molesky. And I know that something huge happened in Minnesota sports yesterday. I know that there was a play that riveted the eyes of the entire state, namely that the Timberwolves won against the Portland Trailblazers and are now on pace to win 52 games this season. That's crazy after only winning 31 last year. This is the play I'm talking. That's the play that everybody watched last night, right, Mitch?
Yeah, absolutely. That's, you know, Minnesota winning, the Timberwolves winning last night, that's definitely the talk of the town right now. So that's the only thing happening in Minnesota sports, that's for sure.
I haven't checked any local papers, but I'm sure that's the cover of all of them, is the Timberwolves.
Absolutely. MVP talk for Jimmy Butler, that's all over the papers.
Come on, this has got to be the talk. No, I know it's the Vikings, but I realize the history of the Vikings. I've lived in Minneapolis or in Minnesota almost my entire life. So I know what happened yesterday and how momentous it was for the Vikings and for the state. But at the same time, can I put even in the same stratosphere that this was also an amazing event for Minnesota sports, that the team is not only turning around, but turning around to the tune of double-digit games? There are going to be almost 20 games better than last season. And to happen in one offseason is something that boggles the mind if you really think about it and really think how difficult it is to build and rebuild a team and how quickly the Timberwolves have done it.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of seemed like, you know, early on in the year, you know, Minnesota was kind of disappointing to an extent. In that, you know, a lot of people thought that, you know, this style of play that they're playing with right now, we would have seen that immediately. So, it's good to see that it is finally coming around, you know, and Minnesota is playing to the style of play that, you know, are living up to the expectations that a lot of people have, you know, pictured for them to have this season. But, you know, as a, you know, being around Minnesota sports and being around the Timberwolves for how many years, you know, it is very refreshing. And, you know, it is an exciting time, not only for Minnesota sports in general with what you mentioned with the Vikings, but, you know, it is a very exciting time in Timberwolves, for the Timberwolves franchise and, you know, Timberwolves fans. So it's a good time to be a Minnesota fan. Hopefully I'm not jinxing anything, but, you know, things are looking up, that's for sure.
Knock on wood real quick. Before we go any further into the episode, Mitchell Hansen, of course, is the one on the line. It is a Monday after all. You can find both of our work at zonecoverage.com. If you want anything outside of this podcast, definitely look on there for written work and other podcasts as well. And I would like to wish everybody happy Martin Luther King Jr. Day. Definitely a day that has reverence around it with what he was able to accomplish and what that meant for the country, especially important considering the leadership maybe in the United States, depending on where you sit for that. But I think it's especially important day. So I would like to wish everybody a happy MLK Day as well. We definitely know what's going on around us here at Locked On Wolves, from the host all the way down to everybody who guests and everybody who's on the show. So happy MLK Day to everybody. Let's dive into this game. Portland Trailblazers were in town the other night, and the Minnesota Timberwolves, Mitch, put the hurt on 120-103. This was a fun game to watch because after a very explosive first quarter from both these teams, Portland led 33-31 after the first quarter. The Timberwolves really dug in and kind of entrenched not only their defense but their offense, held the Trailblazers to 10 points in the second quarter, and they were able to lead the rest of the way after a pretty dominant-looking second quarter defensively. What were some takeaways from this game for you as you were watching everything transpire?
You know, it kind of seemed like in this has kind of been the trend over the last, you know, the five-game winning streak that the Wolves are on. You know, it seems like they jump out to some sort of lead. You know, obviously in this game, I think it was 26 they jumped out to in the end, or their biggest lead. But, you know, it kind of seemed like, and like I said, this has been the trend over the last, you know, handful of games, is that once they built some sort of lead, you know, a double-digit lead, you know, it's basically the game is over. You know, Minnesota kind of steps on the gas and they don't look back. And, you know, that's something that we really haven't seen from the Wolves in the last, you know, how many years, you know, looking back to last year specifically with, you know, how many big leads they blew and how many times they, you know, how many, you know, games they ended up losing after having big leads. So, you know, that's the big thing that, you know, I've really taken away from this year's team and something that we've seen recently. You know, specifically last night, you know, it kind of seemed like, you know, that second quarter that you mentioned, you know, Minnesota obviously outscoring Portland 26-10 in that quarter. You know, that was the difference maker, and that was the quarter that switched everything. You know, Minnesota built that lead and they, you know, didn't let up. And, you know, that was kind of sparked by that second unit, and that second unit's been playing really well for Minnesota as of late, you know, specifically in this, you know, 5-game homestand they just wrapped up. But, you know, that combination of, you know, the second unit playing well, you know, the starters are really playing well, and Minnesota, you know, playing good when it matters most. I think that's the most important thing. And, you know, they haven't really let up, and that's, you know, that's something that we definitely haven't seen out of the Timberwolves, you know, in the last couple of years. And that's something that's definitely a little new this year and something we haven't seen for a while.
Is it a fair assessment to say they were beating this team so bad that they put Shabazz Muhammad in? Is that fair to Shabazz, or is that mean? Is that cruel spirited?
Well, you know, he struggled finding his way into games. So whenever he gets in the game, you know, it's a good side for Minnesota. You know, obviously Cole Aldridge didn't play last night, but whenever Cole and Shabazz Muhammad, you know, end up playing, that means good things are happening for the Wolves. So that's always a good sign when those two get into the game, for sure.
You mentioned the bench, 10 points from Jamal Crawford, and you had this team as well. The other thing that really stuck out, again, a lot of free throws. They had 33 attempts from the charity stripe, shot 81% from there, shot 53% from the field as a team. And it was another one of those games where you had Jimmy Butler lean the way as he's kind of per the usual now with the 24 points, 20 and 11 from Towns. And then Wiggins has really started to, over the last couple weeks here, I would say about the last 2 weeks, he's started to really play well in that third man slot where he's putting up, he had 17 points. He's not really putting up that 25 point mark around there that you saw him hit again and again last season, but he's hitting 17 points and he's shooting efficiently. He had 72% he shot last night. So if he's playing better defensively, and you had him with two steals the other night, and then he's putting up some buckets but shooting efficiently and not shooting like a 38% to only get 17 points, this is really, I think, where you'll see Wiggins live the rest of the season, and that's okay. That's fine.
Yeah, definitely. The thing with Wiggins, too, that, you know, that I've noticed kind of, it's been the trend this season and, you know, specifically as of late, you know, the thing with him is you see him really, you know, peak his performance or peak his play, you know, in the first and in third quarters, the opening quarters of each half. I mean, I was looking at some of his stats, actually a piece that I'm writing for tomorrow on Zone Coverage that it'll be kind of on Wiggins and Towns. You know, the thing with Wiggins is he's one of the only primary players that, you know, plays almost the entire first and third quarter, specifically the first quarter. He is always generally playing the entire first quarter, but he leads the team in scoring in first and third quarter, in scoring, you know, in those two periods. And he's averaging almost 12 points, almost 13 points actually in the last 15 games in those two quarters combined. So, I mean, you look at, you know, he's only averaging, or he's just averaging under, you know, 18 points a game. You know, even look at last night's game, he had 17 points on 8 of 11 shooting. You know, a bulk of that scoring is coming in the first and third quarters, which, you know, makes a lot of sense because, you know, obviously Jimmy Butler and Karl Anthony Towns kind of take over in, you know, in the fourth quarter and in the late in the half. So, I mean, that's something that I don't know if they've, you know, figured out how Wiggins can coexist with Butler and Towns, or kind of, you know, spreading out that scoring a little bit, but it kind of seems like Wiggins has been taking advantage of those opportunities early in the halves. And I, you know, we've definitely seen a spike or increase in his play as of late. That's for sure.
Yeah. And I think you saw that that Towns really started to kind of find a role next to Butler and his dominance, really, when he started out in December, taking over the primary scoring of the Timberwolves. But now, as you've seen January kind of kickoff, you've seen Wiggins kind of slide into that third slot and kind of find himself a role on this team. And you knew that it would have to happen and that January was just a crucial month. But now that it actually has happened, it's really nice to see the offense kind of, it was almost like the last piece kind of slid into place. And now you see a real level of consistency that you just didn't see in the first couple months of the season.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, when, you know, something we talked about, I think it was probably almost a month ago when we were on this podcast talking about, you know, the struggles of Wiggins and what was going on with Wiggins and kind of what we needed to see from him. You know, this is exactly what we needed to see from him. You know, we need to see him not necessarily take over games, you know, like Jimmy Butler or Karl Anthony Towns like they do. Wiggins is certainly capable of doing that. But, you know, just playing in his role and playing in that third option role, which is what, you know, that's the role he's in right now, whether he likes it or not. You know, and just kind of, you know, not doing too much and kind of, you know, doing his job as Tibbs always says. You know, so, you know, that it's very encouraging and that's a very good sign for Minnesota that they do have him kind of on track and that he's, you know, kind of back into the swing of things and kind of playing his game. But I mean, as long as, you know, those three guys, Wiggins, Towns and Butler, as long as they are playing the way they have really in the last week, or handful of games, you know, Minnesota is going to be a very tough team to beat. And, you know, I think that they've kind of displayed that with that 5-game homestand that they just wrapped up, that they are a tough team to play and that they will be down the stretch of the year.
We're going to touch on that 5-game homestand right after a quick word from some sponsors. They had 5 games in a row at home, and coming off the loss to the Celtics and the Nets, they won all 5 of them, so they're on a 5-game run, including, we didn't even talk about it yet, but a tight game against the Knicks that they ended up pulling out by 10 points. Just looking at the opponents, they had the Pelicans, Cavaliers, Thunder, Knicks, and Trailblazers. Looking at some of those opponents before they go on this road stint against the Magic and the Rockets, does it tell you anything that they were able to kind of pull themselves together after a couple losses and really perform admirably at home and not only take care of business but beat some impressive opponents? What's the kind of the message away from these 5 games?
You know, I think it is very impressive, and it is kind of eye-opening just the way that they did beat those opponents. You know, you had a lot of those games. You know, Minnesota jumped out to leads. Is, you know, something that comes to mind is against the Cavs. You know, they jumped out to a huge lead against Cleveland. You know, Cleveland kind of made a run to some extent. It was kind of out of reach at that point, but Cleveland kind of made a run back into the game. You know, Minnesota kind of, you know, pulls away in the fourth quarter. And that was kind of the theme throughout basically that most of that 5-game homestand. You know, the Oklahoma City game, you know, the Knicks game as well was kind of that same way where Minnesota, you know, stretched out to a lead. You know, obviously you always expect opponents to kind of jump their way back into the game or kind of fight their way back into the game, and it's about how you respond to that. You know, and Minnesota did respond really well in those situations, you know, specifically in the fourth quarter. So, you know, the type of talent that they beat as well, I mean, almost all those teams, you know, with the exception of the Knicks, are playoff teams right now, or they're in the playoff picture. So, I mean, that's a very, you know, a positive thing that Minnesota can take away. And I think the big thing was, you know, you even heard some of the player, you know, Jamal Crawford said this the other night, some of the players have even saying this, that coming into this 5-game homestand, you know, Minnesota took this as a big challenge and, you know, kind of a good measuring stick to where they're at this year. And I think if you would have, you know, even said that Minnesota would take, you know, 3 or 4 of these games, that would be a success. But the fact that they swept that series, you know, that is a very positive sign. And, you know, Minnesota is playing great basketball right now. And that's, you know, that's definitely something that they can carry on, you know, into the rest of the month of January and the rest of the season. That's for sure.
Well, not only just the sweep, but they beat these teams by, it was 18, 28, 16, 10, and 17. So the Knicks was the tightest game there. And that wasn't even their best opponent that they played. So really, really impressive stretch here, especially when the Timberwolves look so shaky in that week before or half week before when they kind of put up the dud against the Celtics, came out a little flat, and then lost by 1 point on the road to the Nets. And those, the Celtics lost. The Celtics hold a lot of teams to a few points, but the loss to the Nets was a bit of a bummer to drop, but they came back with a vengeance and really doing a great job not only beating teams but distancing themselves from teams consistently throughout the five games.
Yeah, definitely. You even look at, I mean, we talk about this, or I've talked about this a few times on this podcast, that, you know, coming into the year, obviously everyone looked at the West as, you know, a very tough conference as far as, you know, just the talent that's within the conference. And there is a lot of talent. I mean, there's a lot of tough teams. You look at the Warriors, Rockets, you know, Spurs, Thunder come to mind. But Minnesota's gone 23-6 against the Western Conference opponents, which, I mean, that's pretty remarkable. And, you know, the fact that they've been able to really handle the Western Conference, you know, and the way that they've done it as well, you know, especially in this last five game trip. I know two of those games were against Eastern Conference opponents, but just the way that they've been able to handle Western Conference opponents, and even last year, you know, a lot of the middle to lower teams in the standings, you know, Minnesota struggled with. You know, they had the Pelicans, the Trailblazers, the Nuggets. You know, a lot of those teams, you know, the Grizzlies, they struggled in beating those teams. And, you know, this year they've really, really handled those teams, which is what good teams should do. And, you know, in return, they've gone 23-6 against the Western Conference, and they are, you know, obviously sitting tied for third with San Antonio right now. So, you know, it's definitely something different than what we've seen from last year. And Minnesota is beating, they're beating good teams, and they're also beating the mediocre, or kind of the middle of the pack team, which is what, you know, ultimately good teams do. So that's absolutely a good sign for Minnesota.
Switching gears a little bit here. I don't want to say that I started the narrative, but I feel like I was definitely a part of the beginning stages of the movement of Jimmy Butler for MVP, because I've been hammering home that gong for what has been now 2 weeks, 3 weeks, something like that. And now I feel like I'm seeing headlines of that all over the place. So I was definitely part of the grassroots movement that helped get that into the primary spotlight. But looking at Jimmy Butler as an MVP candidate, what do you think? Where do you think he is in the running? Do you think he actually has a legitimate say to maybe be one of the MVP candidates? And if so, does it hurt him a little bit that he's going to be playing the Rockets without James Harden here as far as his MVP case?
You know, as far as where he stands, you know, I personally, obviously I'm biased with writing for the Wolves, but you know, I personally think, you know, he is definitely an MVP candidate, but I would say that he deserves to be in the top five as far as the MVP race, which, you know, is saying a lot as far as, you know, you even just look at the Western Conference and the amount of talent that's in the West. You know, you have obviously Golden State with Steph Curry and Kevin Durant. You got Houston with James Harden, and then you go to the East and you got Kyrie Irving, you got DeMar DeRozan. So it's tough. You know, and it's going to be, you know, it's a tough race for him to win, just because, you know, the amount of talent and the amount of numbers that other players are dropping, and, you know, Minnesota kind of gets lost in that fold sometimes, whether, you know, it, regardless of how well they are doing, or the Wolves are doing or performing. But, you know, I definitely think that, you know, it will be an uphill battle for as far as Jimmy, you know, winning the MVP race. I definitely think he deserves recognition. And I think that's getting lost right now, is, you know, he isn't getting the recognition that he does deserve, that some of the other players are getting. But, you know, I do think that he deserves, you know, a top five spot when you're talking about the MVP race, that's for sure.
Well, and to, I think if everything goes like it should, as far as voting wise, I think this thing should be fairly diverse in the votes. I think you have LeBron as the favorite. James Harden, I think, is still a dark horse candidate after the injury, depending on how long he stays out. I think Curry could be, just as well as he's played coming back from the injury, I think Curry should be in the conversation. I think Giannis should still be in the conversation. Kyrie sticks out to me as somebody, especially with the loss of Gordon Hayward and the way that the Celtics have played. I think Kyrie has a legitimate say to get some votes. So I think that there should be a lot of votes thrown at quite a few different players. My one fear as far as the voting is that, and like I said, if the voting goes as I believe it should be fairly diverse. The other thing is the flip side of it. The guys like Harden and Curry, who got injured, or Kawhi with his injury, everybody just goes to the de facto, oh, well, LeBron's the favorite and that's the easy vote, so we should just all throw. And that's where you have something where, like, Curry wins unanimously. And as much as Curry deserved it that year, I don't want to see any NBA player win it unanimously, because I don't think there's ever a case to be made where one player should be the unanimous MVP, because there's too many good players in the NBA. So if it doesn't go so chalk like that, I think that Butler definitely will get some votes.
Yeah, definitely. You know, and the other thing too, as far as the MVP race, and I know it kind of gets lost in the numbers, which it should. I mean, the MVP award is about, you know, the production that you are, you know, producing for your team, and nothing against, you know, LeBron, Steph Curry, James Harden, you know, all those guys. You look at Jimmy Butler or even Giannis, you know, and they're, you know, look at their teams last year and look at them this year and look at the reason why. And, you know, the turnaround in Minnesota, you know, obviously it's not just Jimmy, but Jimmy's a huge part of that. And he is the biggest, you know, one of the biggest reasons why Minnesota has had such a big turnaround. And you look at Giannis as well, you know, he keeps propelling Milwaukee, you know, to make that next step every year. And, you know, I personally think that that's, you know, reason enough to put them near, you know, the top, or at least the top handful of MVP candidates, because, you know, that's hard to do. It's hard to turn a team around, and especially, you know, you look at Minnesota and what Jimmy is helping Minnesota do this year, you know, and the turnaround that they put together already this year. That's definitely impressive, and that's, you know, that's something that should be recognized, because, you know, when you look at, you know, the award itself, the most valuable player, you know, Jimmy is the most valuable player, you know, for the Wolves, and, you know, he has been the biggest reason why Minnesota has turned that around. So I know that sometimes kind of gets lost, just because, you know, nothing against, like, LeBron and Steph Curry, but, you know, those are the people that are in the spotlight a lot of the time. They are dropping crazy numbers, like LeBron's having an unbelievable year. But, you know, I think that a lot of times people tend to forget or kind of overlook what the true meaning of the award is. And I think that, you know, you look at specifically Jimmy Butler and Giannis, and those two have really, you know, helped turn around their franchise and helped turn around their teams this year. And to me, that's truly what the award means and what it should, you know, that's who it should be awarded to, is somebody mm-hmm. who's, you know, obviously means the most to their team.
For sure. A little side off of this conversation, if Jamal Crawford played like 25 minutes instead of 18 minutes, do you think he'd be like a sneaky sixth man of the year candidate? Because I know his stats don't hold up for it now, but do you think if he was getting like seven more minutes a game, do you think he'd have the stats to maybe be a sneaky candidate for sixth man?
I would say there's definitely, you know, there'd definitely be a chance. I mean, you know, you look at, I know that's kind of the easy answer and kind of a cop-out answer, but, you know, I definitely think that, you know, with the mix of the reputation that Jamal holds, as well as, you know, how important he's been to that second unit. You know, you look at even the box scores every night, and it seems like Jamal's the, you know, the bulk of the scoring, and, you know, he's going to be that on any team, and he's done that his entire career. But, you know, he is important to that second unit. And, you know, I think that, you know, with the reputation, like I said, that he holds, he would definitely be thrown into that conversation, and I think deservingly so, if he would get, you know, a few more minutes. Right now, I don't think he's in that conversation, but, you know, he could turn it up here in the second half, and that could completely change. So, you know, I do agree that, you know, I think that, you know, if he did get a few more minutes, which, I, knowing Tibbs, that's probably not going to happen, but,
nope.
You know, maybe he does get thrown into that conversation, and he is somebody that definitely makes the difference and is a very valuable sixth man, that's for sure, whether he's winning the award or not.
Yeah, it's just, I know that not at 9.7 points per game and 2.3 assists, that's not going to happen, but right. I just got to think seven more minutes, he's probably getting that up to around 15. And mm-hmm. and two, like the two names that pop in my head with the way they've played this year for that award would probably be Eric Gordon and Lou Williams, but both those guys have played so many started so many games because of injuries on both those teams that they might actually have kind of played themselves out of the running for that award just because of all the starter minutes they've gotten. And so then Jamal Crawford, and especially with the bench unit that he's kind of competing against as far as what the Timberwolves have, I think he would be one of the favorites. But You're right. That's definitely not going to happen because he's not going to get the minutes for it. But it is fun to think about just that you have that level of player on the bench for the Timberwolves.
Right, yeah. And, you know, that was the most, kind of enticing part about bringing him into Minnesota this offseason or heading into the year was, you know, Minnesota has struggled with finding that, you know, that primary scorer, within that second unit. You know, you look at last year and Zach LaVine was kind of the primary scorer within the second unit. You know, Tibbs kind of brought him out of, he obviously started with the starting five, but, you know, he was the first one to the bench. Shabazz Muhammad would come in, you know, be the first player off the bench. And then Zach kind of played with that second unit just to kind of get a scoring start within the second unit. So bringing Jamal in, that was kind of a refresher, and that was kind of, you know, it was nice to see. And it is nice, still nice to have, you know, that primary scoring threat, mixed with everybody else within that second unit. And, you know, that's something that we really haven't seen too often out of the Wolves, you know, specifically that second unit. So, you know, it was nice to see that, Tibbs bring him in this offseason. And I definitely think, you know, that move is paying off so far.
For sure. All right, we're going to have another quick break before we get to Mitch's special love hate segment of the podcast after this break. So there's been some scheduling workarounds. There's been some switch ups in what usually happens, but that's okay because flexibility is one of the top priorities here for the Locked On Wolves podcast. But nevertheless, we still have to get the weekly dose when we have you on a Monday. We still have to get the weekly dose of love hate from Mitch. So it's been a few weeks, but Mitch, give us your love hate for the last week, 2 weeks, however long you want to go back to, of Timberwolves basketball.
This is about the most anticipated weekly segment. You have the NFL playoffs, and then you have the love hate segment right underneath it. So that, you know, this is
Don't sell yourself short. We're neck and neck right now.
Maybe we'll bump it up eventually. We'll see once the Vikings, if the Vikings knock on wood, if they, you know, hopefully they stay in the playoffs, but if they fall out, maybe this will bump ahead of it. We'll see.
You know what? It's a tight race. I'll just leave it at that. I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings on the Vikings, but it's a very tight race.
Right. Well, we'll start off with love. You know, honestly, you know, with everything we've even talked about in this podcast, there's a lot to love, recently or lately with the Wolves, you know, just the way that they have played, as of late, and, you know, the opponents that they've taken down as of late is, you know, it's impressive. And it's, you know, it's something that definitely you can look highly upon. And I think Minnesota will do that, or this will be kind of an important stretch that they'll look back on and keep, referencing to throughout the rest of the year. And, you know, just them able to take care of business at home, that's the biggest thing. And that's the thing that a lot of the good teams and a lot of the good playoff teams do, during the course of the regular season, is take care of their business at home, and kind of control things that they're able to. And, you know, they swept, you know, a 5-game homestand for the first time since 2001, which is, you know, that's pretty remarkable. You have to, you know, go back 17 years to find the last time they were able to do that, which is kind of crazy to think about. But, in a lot of the bulk of the reason that they've been playing so well is, you know, coming on the defensive end, which is kind of what we've been waiting for. So, throughout the course of this season, everyone's kind of been clicking, defensively as well as offensively. You know, we talked about even the bench playing well before. It's really good to see. And, even in the last 15 games, Minnesota's, 12-3, that's tied for the best record in the league, which, it's a remarkable stretch. And, it kind of seems like Minnesota has things figured out. You kind of figured once they figured things out defensively, you know, they have an offense that can kind of, you know, battle up against anybody in the league. But once they, started to figure things out defensively, this was going to be a scary team. And that's kind of what we've seen so far. And hopefully Minnesota can kind of, you know, keep that rolling here in the second half of the year. Switching to hate.
Real quick before you go to your hate, I just want to interject there that how crazy is it that all this gelling has happened in one season? I know you look at it and there's all the raw talent and there's the big names on the team, but still to put a team together in an off season and have them figure it out after 2 months, not even bad months, just two rough months, is crazy.
Well, you even look at OKC, and you know they're still going through growing pains, and you know it kind of seems like, you know, Minnesota they're not dealing with that anymore. And
no.
that is remarkable that, you know, that, you know, is kind of all in the rearview mirror, and you know, Minnesota, you know, figured that out that quickly or this quickly. You know, and I think that a bulk, I'm not saying that, you know, OKC doesn't have the veterans, because they do. They have, you know, Russ, Paul George and Melo, they're all, you know, capable veterans. But, you know, just the mix of, you know, especially like Taj Gibson and Jimmy Butler being familiar with Tibbs' system, as well as them being those, you know, those seasoned veterans. And then you throw in the, you know, Jamal Crawford and Jeff Teague in the mix, you know, with the likes of Karl Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins. I think that that has really helped with, there is a lot of familiarity with the system and, you know, and the personnel. And I think that, you know, that's definitely helped. I mean, you know, you look at OKC, that a lot of those guys didn't have, and they still don't have that familiarity. So they're still trying to figure things out. But it is crazy, because you don't normally see, you know, a team add four main, you know, big pieces like the Wolves did, and, you know, have them coexist and have them thrive like they have this soon. So it's definitely a good sign. And, you know, if this is the beginning, it's kind of crazy to think what, you know, what Minnesota could evolve into as the year ends and as the playoffs kind of begin here.
For sure. For sure. Go ahead on to your hate.
All right. The hate, you know, this is kind of another cop-out answer, but, you know, there really isn't much, you know, to hate with Minnesota right now. Like I said, they're rolling right now. And, it, you know, I guess if I had to choose something, and this is being very, you know, picky, you know, as I talked about, you know, Minnesota going 23-6 against the West, you know, they have struggled against, you know, Eastern Conference opponents. Obviously, they didn't struggle with the last two Eastern Conference opponents in the Cleveland Cavaliers and the New York Knicks. But, you know, Minnesota's 6-10 against the East this year. And, you know, looking ahead to their schedule, you know, even this week, two of their next three games comes against, you know, Eastern Conference teams in Orlando on Tuesday and in Toronto on Saturday. So, you know, it would be nice to, you know, see Minnesota kind of take care of business in the Eastern Conference. I know they, you know, a lot of their focus should be, and it has been on the Western Conference, and, you know, kind of taking care of the teams they need to within the conference. But, you know, it would be nice to, you know, kind of see Minnesota, you know, take care of business and against the Eastern Conference opponents. And they'll definitely have that opportunity to do that this week.
There you go. Finally back in action, the love hate segment that is rocking the Minneapolis and podcasting world, and sending reverberations that maybe triumph any moment in the NFL playoffs. No, people are going to come after us. All right. That's it for us here at Locked On Wolves. Thanks for calling in, Mitch. Really appreciate the late work that you're doing on a holiday.
No problem. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Just before we head out, if you guys could let me know, I was thinking about doing a fantasy basketball podcast coming up here right around the midway point here. So wondering if you guys would be interested in a fantasy basketball podcast. Let me know. Tweet at me at C Molesky, MOLESKY, at C Molesky. And let me know if you guys are interested in that. If there's a bunch of fantasy football fan or basketball, excuse me, fantasy basketball fans out there, I'll definitely pull together a fantasy basketball episode. But definitely let me know. Also, I have officially announced that I'm searching for Hoodie Mello. I was excited to see him this season, and somebody or something has taken him, kidnapped him. Hopefully nothing's happened to him, but I'm officially launching the full search party for Hoodie Mello, my favorite basketball player in the NBA. So we'll be looking for him. Hopefully we can find him sometime before the season ends.
Absolutely. Everyone loves Hoodie Mello.
who could hate Hoodie Mello? That's what I'm trying to figure out, because somebody's taking him, and I'm going to get him back. Don't you worry, Locked On Wolves Nation. All right, that's it for us. Thanks for listening to another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast.